In thinking about the scripture this morning, and the parable is what really stuck out for me. That parable of a tree that doesn't produce fruit. And I thought about that in terms of all the ways that I myself have been involved in gardening and horticulture in my life. I don't know if y'all know this, but my parents have a greenhouse in Ohio. And so I grew up around plants. And I love plants. And I love nature. And I love growing things. And I love seeing them come to the fullness. You know, you put the little teeny plant in the ground and you prepare the soil just so for it. And you water it and you watch it grow. And you watch it bloom and become beautiful. I was also thinking, Don, about your father and how much time and energy he put into, you had told me about putting into camellias, that you watched him as he so carefully, I don't know if y'all know this, but camellias can only be grown in those beautiful varieties that you see around by grafting. Is that what it's called, Don? And you take the rootstock of a really good, you know, camellia that just has a normal old flower on it, and you cut it off. And then you graft this careful little piece onto that stalk. And Don's father would take such care in this, covering them in the cold, making sure they had just the right humidity, just the right soil, just the right amount of water, and they would produce so beautifully. But I wonder, Don, what would he do if he spent all that time and energy, all that special care? Because you said he'd be down there like with tweezers and you know, magnifying glass, just getting that just right. If after all that time and energy, all that special care, keeping it safe in freezes, keeping it watered in droughts, and the blooming thing didn't bloom, what would your father have done? Give it another year. Let's water it a little more. Let's put a little more fertilizer on it. Let's you know, make sure we prune it back just a little bit maybe. And he comes back the next year. And it doesn't bloom. And the year after that. Do you think your father's going to keep a camellia bush in his yard that has no camellias on it? He had faith, and they always did. You know, camellia bushes are pretty even without the flowers, but we keep them for the flowers. And when they don't bloom, I can see your father in his day having said, cut it down. I'll put something worthwhile on that root system. That's a good root system. And we're going to put something worthwhile there. And thinking of God and how much time and energy and care God has put into us, and particularly in this parable, God has put into Israel. He's called them His people. He's made covenant with them. He brought them out of Egypt. He brought them out of Babylon. He has been with them over the years, and time and time and time again, He has come and found that they're just the same old nasty people they were before He came along. Nothing has changed. Where's the fruit? Over and over in the Old Testament, the vineyard is used as a symbol for Israel. And God will talk about the fact He planted good grapes, and He took care of those grapes, and He put a hedge around the vineyard. And He walks in, and what has He got? Wild grapes. So, He's going to tear down that wall, He's going to trample out those vineyards, and you're just going to let them fend for themselves. Other times, He talks about the care that He's going to give yet again. And today in our parable, God has come and has found, He's come in the person of Jesus Christ, and has found yet again, there is no fruit. Now it's perfectly well and right for God to expect fruit from Israel after all that He has given to them. It's perfectly well and right for Him to be upset saying, this is ridiculous. Just cut it down. We are going to start over. But there's another part of God. And this parable is kind of a conversation within God's very self. There's another part of God that says, no, just one more chance, just one more try. We're going to pour just a little more into this. I'm going to come my very self in Jesus Christ. I'm going to dig around in Israel's life, and I'm going to put as much good stuff on them as I can. Will Willimon does a sermon on this parable, and he gets real into that symbol of manure, because I guess he didn't grow up where I grew up. And to him, that's a really weird thing. You know, you just don't talk about manure in polite company. You just, you know, that's not a church word. In fact, he says this is the only place it's used in the New Testament. And he thinks there's something a little impolite about talking about manure. And this just shows how desperate God is to put on whatever it's going to take. Now, I grew up around manure. I mean, you know, Grandpa had a farm. You know, what did you want to do when you want your flower beds to do well? You called up Grandpa and said, hey, can you bring me some of that manure? I'm going to be working in the flower beds today. To me, manure was a gift. It was something wonderful. After it sat in the little pile and got composted, you know, we're talking composted manure, and it's just wonderful stuff. It's rich and fertile and lovely. It just doesn't seem that way. And maybe that is a really good image for what God does in our life. God pours so much rich and fertile and wonderful things into us. He gave His life for us in Jesus Christ. Dying on the cross is not something pretty. But man, has it enriched this world, and man, has it enriched this our lives. We want to be the tree that produces fruit. I think that's pretty simple. And when we hear about a tree that doesn't produce fruit, there's some images that come to mind. First of all, I think the thing is that we start to think maybe about other people first. When you think about something that's not producing fruit, I think about how much love and care that I have seen parents pour into their children, good parents, and how many tears they've shed when those kids chose a different path. I mean, that is some painful stuff to sit with parents as they agonize about their children's fruitless life in drug addiction. I think it's agonizing for God to think about His children that He has poured so much into and loved so much being fruitless. I think that it's easy for me to think about other situations. But remember, it's the context in which Jesus tells this parable. He has some people come up to Him and say, bring up a situation that has happened in Jerusalem. Galilee is up in the north, and people would pilgrimage down to Jerusalem for the festivals and the sacrifices to offer in Jerusalem in the temple in the south. Some Galileans up in the north had made that journey to offer their sacrifice, and Pilate had made an example of them for some reason. I don't have what they did that Pilate got upset with them. But he had them killed. And he had their blood drawn out of them. And he had their blood mingled with their sacrifice to God on the altar in the temple. It was a really horrible way to die. It was really a horrible blasphemy to have happened to them with their blood being offered to God that way. You just don't do that. You do not put human blood on the altar. You just don't do that. So in Jesus' day and age, people had a tendency to think if something bad happened to you, it must be because you're a bad person. You know, they're thinking, oh, you know, this is somebody else. See, you know, those bad people, they went down there and something bad happened to them. And Jesus says, no. Basically, Jesus is saying, if you think that somebody else is a worse sinner than you, I'm here to tell you it's not true. All of you are equally as bad. Now, I don't like that particular statement. Does anybody else here like being told, you know? I mean, you know, I like you, Joyce. I really do. And I just can't look at you and see you as an equally bad sinner as, you know, some of the people on death row. That's a hard thing for me. You know what's even harder? Is for me to look in the mirror and think that. Jesus is telling this parable as an attempt to try to get them to hold up the mirror to themselves. So as we talk about this parable and applying it to our lives today, I'm going to ask you to do something really, really hard. And I'm going to try to do it for myself. And that is to hold up the mirror to me. To hold up the mirror to you. Instead of thinking and looking and talking about, you know, those other Christians. Oh, there's other people. To think about ourselves. You're a fig tree. You've been planted in a vineyard. And God has come looking for fruit. And you have none. God's angry. Cut it down, he says. But the other side of God says, no, show mercy. One more year. Give them more time. I can do amazing things with this life if they'll just let me. I think the second temptation about this parable is when we have to identify ourselves as the tree that needs to produce fruit. What do you start thinking about? I mean, you start asking the question, okay, fine, you know, what do I need to do? Give me the list. You know, just give me a list. 10 things, I'll do them today. I don't want to be the tree that's cut down. Please, 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 just give me the list. What do I do? You know, fine, fine. I know you've been nagging me to come to Sunday school. I'll come, okay? I'll be there next week. You know, I know you've been handing all this crazy prayer stuff out. Fine, fine, fine. I'll pray. How long do I have to pray for? How many times? Just give me a list. I know I haven't been to church for a while, but quit looking at me. I'll be here next week, I promise. I know I should read my Bible more. You know, good grief, I've never even heard this story before. I never even heard this parable before. And who are these Galileans and blood being mangled? I don't remember that story being in my Bible. Maybe I really just don't read the scriptures enough. Maybe if I just read the scriptures, then God will be pleased with me and he won't chop me down. We start thinking about the list of things we should do. But remember, the Pharisees, who we were talking about last week, and Jesus is always critical of the Pharisees. You know, that's why we tend to think they're the bad guys. But the Pharisees weren't the bad guys. The Pharisees were the good guys, right? You know, they were the ones that were into doing. Pharisees fasted. When's the last time you fasted? Pharisees prayed every day. Have you ever missed a day praying? Pharisees knew their scriptures by heart. Who wants to quote the first Bible verse this morning? You can't do John 3:16. Yeah, how about something out of Zephaniah? Can't do it, can you? Pharisees kept the Sabbath holy. They didn't do one bit of work. They obeyed all 600 and whatever laws it was. It just had to do with the Sabbath itself. Pharisees were into doing. They kept kosher. Do you know how hard it is to keep kosher? I mean, this isn't just you don't eat pork. I mean, you never eat meat with milk or anything that's had milk in it. You don't eat your meat on the same dish as you eat your milk products on. I mean, you know, it's crazy. I couldn't keep kosher to save my life unless I'd been raised in it and knew just how to do it. Now, the idea of kosher was that everything you ate and everything you did and everything you touched in the way of food made you think about God. Every time they put something in their mouths, they had to think about, is this kosher? Is this godly? Am I going to follow God? I mean, it's all I can do to remember to pray before I shove the first bite in my mouth. The Pharisees had it all in the way of doing. I mean, they had it all over us. These were the good guys, right? They never missed a synagogue. And yet, over and over, Jesus says, they don't get it. Over and over, he says, that's not what it's about, guys. And see, you know, all the Pharisees were men, so the women are off the hook, you know. This is one place when it's fun, you know, to have sexism in the Bible. Hey, the Pharisees were guys. They were wrong. Women, of course, you know, we didn't have a chance to do it wrong. Nobody was looking at us, so we're off the hook today. But he kept saying over and over, you don't get it. Because, you see, it's not about what we do. I mean, look at the parable. Who's doing all the work? Is the tree digging around the tree's roots? Is the tree, you know, going down to the barn and getting the manure and bringing it back and working into the soil? Have you ever seen a tree do any of those things? Remember in this parable, you're the tree. Can you just imagine having a conversation with, the tree saying, you know, you're looking pretty shabby. You ought to prune yourself. You know, I think you need a little fertilizer. Why don't you go get yourself some? You know, you've got some weeds growing down there. Want to dig around yourself? I mean, trees can't do that. God does it all. Isn't that amazing? The gardener, the symbol of God in the parable, is the one that's doing all the work. I got to thinking, you know, what can a tree do to produce fruit? What can the tree do? The tree can't sit there and concentrate on producing fruit. The tree can't glue fruit on its little branches so it looks good. The tree can't say to the other tree, hey, you have plenty, give me some. The tree can't dig around itself. It can't put manure on itself. It can't take care of itself in those ways to produce fruit. A tree cannot produce fruit by working harder. So the question comes, are we going to be able to produce fruit for God? By working harder, reading our Bible more seriously, praying more earnestly, coming to church more often, running in place for God. So what can a tree do to produce fruit? A tree can do one thing that I've thought of, and Don will probably tell me other stuff after the service, about what a tree can do to produce fruit. A tree can determine where its roots grow. I mean, you plant the tree here, those roots can go everywhere. Ask somebody who's planted a willow tree and thought that would be really nice in their yard. Next thing they find out, it's growing in their pipelines 100 feet on the other side of the house. And they've got to, you know, totally redo their plumbing. Trees can decide where their roots grow. Paul uses this image in Ephesians when he says, be rooted and grounded in Christ. We can decide where our roots are going to grow. We can decide what is going to nourish our life. Where we're going to get our nutrients and our nutrients from. Just like the tree sends those roots out to find those nutrients to nourish its life. The farmer can dig around the tree. The farmer or the gardener can put the manure on the tree. But it's up to the tree whether it's going to take that stuff in, whether it's going to grow its roots into it and take it in. No gardener can make the tree take the stuff in. I mean, you cannot get a tree's roots and make it take the stuff in. I mean, it's got to do it. It's part of being a tree. It's got to do it itself. So, we may not be able to work our way harder, pray our way harder, study our way harder, but we can decide what we're going to be rooted and grounded in. We can decide if we're going to take in all of this stuff that God is doing for us. Because remember, we're the tree. God's doing all the work. Our only job is to appropriate it. And doesn't that feel good? You know, just sit back and take it all in. And what is all of this stuff that God is offering for us to take in? I mean, you know, God is not saying, you know, here's more stuff to do. God is saying, here's more of me. I mean, God has given us Jesus Christ. God has given us forgiveness and love and mercy and grace. Boy, has God shown us patience. Those are the things that God is giving us. You don't my opinion, you don't produce fruit by concentrating on fruit. You produce fruit by concentrating on bringing in the things that God has to offer. Love for us, for me. Forgiveness for me. Hope for me. Faith in me and for me. Those are the things that God is offering for me to take in. So, what if praying, you know, like, I remember when Pat was up here, she talked about prayer, and she said, you know, what if praying is not something we do for God, but something God does for us? What if praying is not us trying to figure out what God wants to hear from us so He'll think we're great people? But what if praying is simply letting God love us? You know that praying is it's just letting God love us, listen to us, care about us, nurture us. What if reading the Bible isn't something we do to earn points with God or something we do because we have to? But what if reading the Bible is just simply hearing God say He loves us? Hearing all of the wonderful stories of the things that God has done for us, wants to do for us, plans to do for us. What if coming to church isn't something we do for God, or we do to show that we're good members of the church? But what if coming to church is coming to God's house? You know, where, you know, you're the guest. And God's going to serve you. All that love and forgiveness. You know, what if coming to church is coming to be loved and cared about by God? And just get to, you know, experience that. And what if witnessing to our faith is not something we do because Jesus said, you know, go into all the world. What if witnessing isn't something we got to get just all bent out of shape and feeling guilty about and uncomfortable because we don't want to do it? And what if witnessing is just our cup overflowing? You know, all that stuff that we've been taking in of God, you know, we're just not big enough to keep it. It just starts pouring out of us. What if witnessing is just letting the love of God flow out of me? Letting the forgiveness of God flow out of me. Letting hope and patience and gentleness and all of those things that God has filled me with just pour out. What if that's all there is to it? In fact, what if fruits aren't really something we have to so much produce? Like, work at it. Because I don't think we have in and of ourselves what it takes to produce fruits. I mean, trees have to take in nutrients to produce fruit. I think we have to take in the stuff of God. We just have to let it in. That's our job. That's it. Let it in. And just like a healthy fig tree, taking in the nutrients it needs can't help but produce figs. I mean, that's what a fig tree does. It produces figs. If it's got what it, if it's taken in the nutrients, it's going to produce figs. It can't help but do it. It's just its fig tree-ness. What if it's the same thing for us? Producing fruit is just what happens to us when we take in all God has to give us. Now the question is, how? How do we take this stuff in? Well, I've given you some ideas. And just letting God love you. Just experiencing that forgiveness. And because I am a doer, I can't help myself.
I have lots.
something that I shared with the prayer group that we did on Wednesday. And to me, this is a prayer, a way of praying, that just allows me. It does this for me. It may not do this for you. If you like it, use it. If you don't, don't. But for me, allows me to stop trying to do and to be and to say and to have all of the things and just to sit there and allow myself to receive. But you know, I think that's the whole point. God has so much to give us. And all we have to do is let it in. I hope that some way this week that you will find a way to just let God love on you. Because when we look in that mirror, we know two things for sure. One, God doesn't love us any more than anybody else. And secondly, God doesn't need us any less.